Okay, it's last lecture for this course. And later today, I'm going to wrap up the course. And as I promised, I give some tips for the exam. Also, that's why some of you are here today. But first of all, we have a visitor, as I said in my email today. I don't know how much visitor. He's our most current recent professor of information systems here. How many of you have met him already? Okay, few of you, Pekka Abrahamsson, welcome anyway. Okay, new for most of you here. Okay, so I've seen his career from distance. I haven't met him personally before he moved to Jyväskylä last autumn, but I've seen his career for past 15 years or so from distance. And one of the things I most respect in his work is his capability to move ahead in this field. And that's why he was the person I wanted to ask this question. And please tell me something of your thinking. What are the most current issues or possibly the future, what you really want to know about systems development tomorrow when you go for working in the industry? Well, most of you possibly in this course are there already, but with these words, welcome.
Thank you.
Stage is yours.
All right, testing my voice. 1, 2, 3. Can we hear? All right, excellent. I will take you to the future. I don't have a whole lot of time, but I will take you to the future. After this few minutes, you will know everything you need to know about tomorrow, about systems development in tomorrow's world. I will show you what we did 2 weeks ago. We were in Berlin, and we won University of Jyväskylä, won the best project award, or the best project idea award, that was given by companies like Philips, Samsung, Daimler Chrysler, and BMW, to name a few, about our vision to the future, what they like. And so when you think about the future, if we go back in 1960s, I wasn't born in 1960s, but let's pretend we go back in 1960s, they were looking at the year 2000 as the marking spot of tomorrow. Do you know what they saw in 1960? What was the big thing in 2000, so many years ahead? People were wearing rubber suits, complete rubber. Nobody knows why, but it seems like futuristic. And we were living at 2000, we were living in this space shuttle like UFOs. Well, the future didn't turn out as we expect. Seeing far away is really, really hard. So we can guess whatever for the next 20, 30 years. It's a good exercise. Most likely the future will be something different. But if we look closer, and not so far away, we have ways to see that. And now that you're thinking about, I know that you guys are master students, and you're thinking of these research topics. So if you want to take a look at the future, I would be your man in that, to guide your way. So that's something that interests me a lot. But let me bring you in the future immediately. So I will take the, let's say, stage away for all those things that how is the future from the systems development viewpoint. So we don't talk about the rubber suits here. And this is what I did in Berlin as well. I showed how the future is. And you guys have been there. I guess you use it every day without knowing that this is tomorrow. And I will put it here. And then I will hear this, wow, I feel it. All right? Future of systems development. And that's it. Amazing. It's coming. It's a bit slow because we are in university and you are not allowed to see the future. Whenever the future is downloading, I will explain why this is the future. Tomorrow's world is online. It's already today online. It's connected and it's iterative. Online, connected, and iterative. Those are the three characteristics of every single system on the earth. And there is a system that is that already today. And that's Netflix. You know when the Netflix developer presses the submit button, which means that his code is done? How long does it take for you to see it? Here in Jyväskylä, the actual result, that's called deployment. When you deploy code, when do you see that? Well, this is a systems development advanced topics. So when we were living the life that was not so advanced, not so long ago, in year 2000, the model was called waterfall. And when the deployment button was pressed, it took 3 to 6 months to see the results out in the user's hand. 3 to 6 months. Think about that. Now it takes 60 minutes. Whoops, I'm wrong. It takes 8. Sorry, time has gone. That was the result of the last year. 8 minutes last year, now 3 minutes. 3 minutes. Netflix guy decides that now you will get something new in your face, and you are already using it. Here in Jyväskylä, Finland. That is, ladies and gentlemen, future. Every single system is like this. You can think about those cars. Oh, yes, you can always think about the refrigerator. By the way, don't buy. This goes on video, I know. That's good. So those who are watching me from the video, they should know this as well. Don't buy the refrigerator of today, which has a screen. And it's called smart fridge. No, it's not. It's a dumb fridge. So you should keep your way away from that. Or if you are buying that, make sure you are protected inside the house. Your inside network must be protected. Otherwise, the next door neighbor is looking in your fridge. Well, then you say, who cares? Well, it's a huge security breach that we have coming. Every single device, your shoes, your left shoe is talking to your right shoe. Why? I don't know, but it does. The exchange in information, that is what is happening. We call it IoT, whatever. We are today building the biggest systems in the world that are so connected that nobody can predict what happens. And now how Netflix decides what they do? Here we have this requirements engineering, requirements analysis. In the fast-moving world, you don't have the luxury. You have to get the results. So you push the stuff to customer test. You have 10,000 customers in Jyväskylä. No, you don't. In Finland, maybe. Scandinavia, more likely. And then 10,000 in Asia. You get the results immediately. You get those user base done. And when we do a customer survey, we talk to 100 customers. 100 is a lot. No, it's not. It's nobody. 10,000 is somebody. Million, you get an answer. And you can reach that today with an instinct. And that is today. Requirements engineering. Companies often live in the waterfall life. They talk about agile, but in reality, agile is for those who cannot. Those who can, they call it DevOps. They call it continuous deployment. This is the key word, continuous deployment. If you are in the continuous deployment, and you know the capabilities of full stack developer, you were hired yesterday. No, you were hired 4 years ago already. And that's the secret in getting access to software market, if you have development capabilities. But needless to say, you need to understand how continuous deployment changes everything. That is the key, and we haven't even realized that. Companies are still hoping that they realize that at some point. All right, so if we have these systems that they are not all Netflixes, that's a plural, many Netflix thingies, but that's your autonomous car. What about that? A car that is already out there, million kilometers have been driven with the Google car. It's doing much better than a human car, actually, who human player or driver. The most difficult thing in that area is not how the car stays on the road or how the car behaves. It is when the car meets a human. Because humans are unpredictable. To a certain degree, you know what we do, but then we do something else because we are humans. Car predicts. A huge topic in this area is ethics. When Google car drives off the road, hits a number of people in the, because that sometimes happens, it's physics and law, where will it land? It will decide where it will land. So who will be wiped out? And who will implement this ethics? So here is University of Jyväskylä, that's one of the rising areas. We have PhDs coming in that point. So not all of these things can be deployed immediately. And the reason we need to deploy immediately is that when we need to fix something, we cannot wait. Previously, we were collecting these bugs and fixes and doing them later. You don't do that. You have to immediately pump it up. And I show you now what we proposed in Berlin, where we are building the project that won the prize. And so our vision of tomorrow and the development of systems. And imagine the car being whatever physical device, but car is what we used. New IED, a development environment for systems with hardware. So that was the V-Ride proposal. The point here is that we move the development of a physical device into the virtual world, where we have the physically the pace of the hardware is there. In this case, an automotive vehicle, it could be the magical refrigerator or a robot or whatever, even a machine moving in Jupiter, which is not possible right now. But we could make it possible. That means that we can start developing the software from day one, and we don't have to wait until all that hardware specification gets done, because we have good enough specification to get started with. And then we can start deploying the deployment. Netflix, it took 3 minutes. It takes 0.00, so many zeros, 1 second, and you see the immediate impact on the car behavior. That's what you're interested in. These environments are used to generate loads of data. And then we have IBM's Watson here. And we dump that stuff to Watson, and then we don't know what happens. That's the artificial intelligence part. So anything, if you want to know and start to understand about the tomorrow's opportunities or stuff. Now I don't see which one is this year. Let's put here 2017. It's enough. So this is you always should check the Gartner's hype cycle. It comes out every year in July or August. And what's interesting is to look at the stuff that was there 5 or 6 years ago. So look at the old hype cycles. So for example, then you realize how this works. At some point, 3D printer was going to be in everybody's home. Because we are printing all the stuff ourselves. We don't buy anymore. So ladies and gentlemen, how many of you own a 3D printer? Let's give a big round of applause. The first person I have met for a long time. So we have a winner. What do you use it for? She's a designer, so designer needs this kind of a printer because it's cool and prototyping, good. Yes, so it didn't happen. One out of 70, 60 people has the 3D printing. If you look at this, 3D printing today is not even in the, I don't see it, 4D printing is coming up. And then if you look at what I was getting so excited about, virtual reality, it's like the old guys are getting excited about the virtual reality, which means that we start to see the applications of it in new areas, like software development, like systems development. Think about that, you know, you have the team in Bangalore in India. How many of you have been to Bangalore in India? Not many of you. Anyway, so when we go into that environment, your team from Bangalore in India is going to be in the same environment where you are. You are physically, tangibly discussing and talking about the same thing. And software is a unified language, which all the software developers always understand. So you can see the virtual reality is moving out of the picture and on the top. So today, if you want to be hot, if you want to do something cool, it must have a word deep in front of it. When it's deep, it's going to be cool. And most likely you will be get bought by a big company because they want to buy all the companies which name has deep learning, deep insights, deep leverages, or deep something. That's the way to set up today's business. And it is connected to machine learning. So these are now at the height of inflated expectations. So we will soon realize that the world wasn't solved by today's artificial intelligence solutions. Now we fear that all the lawyers go away, which might be good or not, I don't know. But there is already lawyers' work being done by the AI machines. And so there are places where they apply really, really well, and there are places where it doesn't apply. I have now master students working on bots as leaders. So tomorrow's leader, could it be bot? If so, how? And what would be the implication of it? How would that work out? So here are a lot of topics that work, because master thesis is your calling card. When you go work and you don't have much done in the previous past, you show the master's thesis because it is concrete, it's tangible, and you know about that area. Because when you study 6 to 8 months on intensively of topic, you are pretty good. I would not say the best in the world because that is a PhD. Master thesis brings you pretty good level of knowledge. And that is a calling card, so carefully select the topic. It's very important. For those who want to know the tomorrow of the systems development, there is something that is coming out now, and I mean, it has been there. Sometimes stuff is around, and you don't know it's big, but it's there. But I show you something that is big, it's around, it will be bigger. And this is about processes and stuff. So let's go with the Gartner hype cycle. As you can see, you know, you can do the whole presentation these days from Google Images. Pretty much everything is there. So come on. Well, you can see what you can. So the thing with the problem we have is that we are, when there's every time there's a new thing, like we go into virtual world to develop, continuous deployment changes everything. So at the same time, we are also inventing the new terminology. So we'll have much cooler names. Spotify develops software with tribes. They don't have teams, they have tribes. They have had it for a long time. I'm not sure whether they are now happier or better developers, but they just have a completely new, different terminology for stuff that they do. Maybe they have also powwows for the meetings. I don't know. This is the flavor in our field, in information systems and in software engineering, that you have to come up with new names. And then the researchers are saying, the old, like Ture was saying, you know, there's a paper on that. Agile, yeah, nothing new there. So agile is old wine in a new bottle. Well, agile did change everything at its time, because the only thing we were pushing out before agile was processes. There's no stuff coming out if you only work in processes. We were doing so much processes that it you know, Sony became Sony Ericsson, and then it died. Because they only were pushing out the smallest screen in the world. And then at some point, I was making this claim that Nokia is the only company who doesn't care about the processes. Okay, it went out as well, so. But it's back. I don't know about the processes. So there is something, if you look at these projects where software is being done, here are the common things regardless of the project. That's why they are called alphas. It's like the alpha thing. They are there. And you cannot argue against me that they wouldn't be stakeholders who are involved in the project. If there are no stakeholders in the project, it's hard to imagine the project. Opportunity, there is a need for that project. Every project has some kind of requirements, whether they're implicit, explicit, or what. They're always there. There's always a system to be done, some kind of system. And there must be team, human team, that is putting together. And finally, they have always some kind of way of working. Maybe not explicit in a small company, or very explicit, but GRAP in a large company. GRAP is a technical term when I use it. And work is finally the technical artifact that you are pushing forward. So this is the future of software engineering today. We don't teach it, but we should from year one. This is the foundation where all the projects are laid on. So what your magical capability is, when you learn this and how it works, is that you can get a hold on any project. You analyze the project, okay, you understand, you know, what should be the way of working in all kinds of different contexts. And the company is not driven by the fashions and fads, but rather they would understand, now we get a new, we're subcontracting to our Chinese friends. It has an implication on the way we work. With using the essence kernel, you can actually identify this new way of working. If this would be a real lecture with more time, I would nail it down. Don't have time. And this is not that type of lecture. If you want to work on this, talk to me. And I'm leading the global network doing this stuff. Mm-hmm. Now, I have a few minutes, 5 minutes, so if there's a question. And I saw a futuristic city, which is not true, and never will be. Yeah, yes, this is interesting. How to make future products, like the products that are day after tomorrow products. The way to do it would be a wonderful topic also. for the master thesis. Think about it. How to make products that don't exist today? This is the way you do it. And I tell you now, the big secret is going to be on the street. You will use it. Transform yourself into 2023 year. Are we there? Now we are there. All right. And now, imagine this software development in the virtual world thingy. We can safely assume that it's there. Somebody did it. Or not, but we assume that it's there. The world exists. All the developers are inside. The whole community is there. You are, you know, so your thing here is that, and this is how you make really big products or great ideas, you assume that that tomorrow's world exists, is true, and you start developing on top of that. So your technological base starts from there, 2023. You start developing from that future onward. And when that future hits, all your products and services are going to be available. You are number one in the world. You just bought yourself years of lead time before the others. Alternatively, it's an English word. My Italian years. You can go to that point and then backtrack to today. You become part of making that tomorrow. Maybe you start developing that environment. Or there are many ways you can make these visionary ideas. Did you know that in Finland we have 73% of forest? And I would say 2023, all those trees are known. We know their width, their height, the speed of growth, their health. So what we can do is that we can start developing with that assumption that, yes, that's tomorrow, and you get all those stuff out before anybody else, because it will happen. Or you go, that is the future, we will help to build the sensors and stuff that makes every tree known. It's up to you. It's risky because the future often doesn't realize with the pace that you anticipate. And I have been part of, it was there, the home automation team in 1999. And I'm not that old. I was just super young then. In 1999, we were talking about home automation. And out of all the workshops, ideation, we came up with two ideas, and always the same two ideas. If the home automation is as advanced as it could be to the tomorrow, these two things will happen. That refrigerator knows what is inside. So you, if your milk is forgotten, it's so easy to get it because you know somehow, magically. So how many of you have this fridge that tells you what is inside? That's 20 years waiting for that to happen. Second most valued idea of tomorrow back in 1999 was, and this is always men who are ideating, so maybe this is the reason, oh, those plants and flowers. There must be a way that the watering is automated. That's the second highest level of intelligence a manly home can have. And how many of us have plants automatically watered today? What about the 3D printer? Are we watering the automatically? No. But we could print it and make it somehow work. All right, that was my time. I have time for one question. Thank you so much. Now the question time. I know these guys, they are so eager to ask. When I leave, they start asking. What will be asked in the exam? As I know the future, but luckily Sami saved for one question. No, you don't.
Okay.
All right.
But that's pretty fine, by the way. You get caught in my lecture, so.
All right. Good. Hey guys, I would run. Thank you so much.
And if you ask for the material, it's all there.
Okay, now we wait a bit. I have to sign in again to get my slides for today. So at least, maybe we come back to this, but by the way, what Pekka just told you a couple of minutes about those alpha, whatever it was. I didn't see the concept before this, but I think that's has been at least part of the aim of this whole course. So, like, we have gone through different approaches during the course. Not the very most hot topic in the field, possibly, but on which we have some scientific material already. And but that's pretty much the whole point of because this approach is changed, but I hope you get some kind of general thinking in the field. So when the new approach is coming in the field, there are still the very same things in the foundation and the very same question you have to raise in the organization, whatever it is. Depending on the case. Okay, wrong folder. Now I'm gonna break this. Okay. Now it shows what I wanted. Then the picture for you. Yes, now we are there. Okay, then, my final words. Not, hopefully, the absolutely final words, but for this course. Anyway. Okay. I will come back to some of the same ideas which Pekka just told you. At some point, but let's start from here. Quick revision. This is what we quickly discussed about last time. We discussed some time about crowdsourcing in the end of the last lecture. And you have a couple of papers in your course readings about this also. We discussed something about that. This is not throughout summary of it. Like crowdsourcing, we started introduction with big innovative ideas. And generally, there are competitions, microtasking, whatever. But then we got through very quickly, I don't know if you got the picture, of those couple of simple examples of software development. The idea was that it's possibly not so big and huge and so highly different from what we had before, but there are just with some small changes to the habits we have had before, we can get some leverage of the crowd. That was the idea. Examples, I showed you a picture of one paper that discussed ways to benefit crowd for requirements. That simply meant that if you have a product and a lot of users, you systematically collect user data. Possibly some that automatically, then you may have separate system, customer feedback system, and then you need some ways to go through the data. Hopefully some of that automatically if you have a lot of data and so on. And okay, that was example of systematic way of get leverage of crowd for requirements. But then we discussed a bit about testing. Couple of examples, there are some companies who have a crowd of experts. In some examples, you may buy some experts from that kind of company who has connection to a crowd of people. Maybe you have a online company who has in their database hundreds of thousands testing experts in one of the cases we discussed last time. And then in software development, we can select, for example, 20 experts of that crowd, which we can kind of access our own capabilities that way. So it doesn't mean we use thousands of people for that, in that model, but there are thousands or hundreds of thousands, even potential experts, and we can select with some criteria of that crowd. Okay, that's one proposed model. Or we can, okay, obviously, if we have a large number of users, we can think ways to systematically use that crowd as testers, different models. We don't go to the details for that. But that makes sense, for example, okay, of mobile platforms you possibly know. If you have Android phone, I don't know how often you meet some issues with compatibility, but there still are. It's pretty standard platform, but still there are some issues. You have different devices, different variation of different distributions of and versions of Android OS, and so on. In a company, if we have a team developing software, we have limited number of different combinations of devices, software, whatever. If we have thousands of users, they have possibly all the possible combinations to find bugs for us. That's the idea of IoT is mentioned there. So it's raised as a big issue in IoT. It's less standardized. You have a lot of different devices in the network, and there are some issues for that. It's more heterogeneous, and if you can use crowd for that, you have a lot of different kind of combinations, different devices, and so on. And okay, let's go on from here. That was about last time. Coming to sum up something about this whole course, this is simplified comparison. We are not going to through that comparison of this, but from some narrow perspectives, how some characteristics are different. We may have an agile team in kind of, if we take a look at the Agile Manifesto and all the principles, it's possibly best for a rather small in-house team, local team that can communicate a lot informally. Change a lot of information. They have a lot of common tacit information. They don't have to share. There is ongoing negotiations and short sprints, and you negotiate requirements again each sprint and so on. You can be really open to changes. It's easier in that kind of small group. Architecture may evolve during the project, one of the ideas. Maybe sometimes we can really do that. You get the idea. That's kind of foundation of agile thinking. But when we go outsourcing or even offshore outsourcing, not the next building, but far away, something changes. We need more control, coordination, possibly more formal communication. So this overhead means that changes are more difficult. So, yeah. And from the research, okay, it doesn't mean that you can't success in a complex setting, but more likely you success and say, are able to save some costs if you have well-defined projects, very rather simple, in which you don't have to go this kind of agile continuous negotiation about the changing requirements again and again. So, because the perception is that it's too much overhead head costs often in outsourcing setting, especially if you do that far away, offshore, different culture, time zone, and whatever. Okay, this is simplification. So, next step, more formal communication. You can't negotiate the requirements so often. So, okay, you can, but it's more difficult changing. Okay, and then when we go to crowdsourcing, which we just discussed again a little bit, you have to see it different. You possibly cannot do everything with crowdsourcing model. Okay, people have tried. You have one paper of that. It didn't go so well. Or partly it did, but not for the whole project. So, but crowdsourcing, the basis is you must have some simple, well-defined tasks which you can share to the crowd. That's the basis of getting some leverage. Because if you want to get thousands of users to do something, you cannot negotiate one-to-one with everyone. That's a clear thing. So basically, there may be exceptions to this, but basically in crowdsourcing, this is what it requires. You must have well-defined, rather small, simple tasks for the crowd, and you can get benefit out of it. So you don't negotiate with the crowd. You just give the task, and this is the other side of the coin that you can read it from the paper again. The case of crowdsourcing, that the crowd has the selection. It does what it wants. You have to give them motivation to do the tasks anyway. And in that paper, in your readings, show that they shared, they broke down the whole project into smaller tasks and raised competitions on a platform for that. And what they found that some of the tasks didn't interest the developers. Even in that specific platform, they have high number of potential developers to join in, but some of the tasks didn't just provide enough motivation somehow. I don't can't explain, and they didn't even couldn't explain it throughout in the paper. But okay, this is simplification of the different models. These kind of things we must understand of the differences. The real question is that in which kind of environments, for what kind of needs, what kind of projects we can use what. And okay, something about what we have discussed during the course. Okay, much of the agile thinking, for the beginning at least, was about this, as I just these guests. Okay, we may have a single team somewhere. Possibly most of the thinking in the previous courses, like project management and basic systems development courses, the thinking is about this. We have a single team somewhere, and then we have possibly customer. Your first kind of idea in the thinking is some software company like Tieto doing in a project for Ministry of Education or for whatever, or some factory. Okay, then we had discussed at some level about distributed organizations, some ideas with the agile discussion, and then when we discussed about outsourcing, it's again this. So there are some more things you have to do to coordinate and manage something else different when you have distributed environment instead of one rather small local team. Okay, then we discussed about outsourcing. It's different. We may have some in-house structure for the development, and then we have some external vendors. We can have one or many, and so on, or it may be wider network for that. Okay, then we finally discussed about crowdsourcing. That means, okay, they are kind of external vendors for us from our perspective in software development, but usually they are anonymous. We don't know who the crowd is. Okay, that's different. And there are some limitations we just discussed about. We can't use the crowd for anything. They participate voluntarily and so on. Okay, then one more concept for this course. This is nothing new. A natural idea based on those. Okay. I think this term has been used something like 10 years in the field. But we may have ecosystems, so different kind of combination of relationships around something. And what it means. Okay, here is some definition. Let's try to make some sense of it. So it means we have some common technological platform. Well, you find different kind of definitions, but this is fine enough for me. Okay, you have some common technological platform. Then you have a set of actors. You're not only one, but you have many actors that work around some platform. And you have a number of, it's called software solutions or services based on that. Okay, here are some examples. Okay, you know this is not difficult to understand. Like iOS, Apple, in Apple world, okay, in phones, seem to simplify it, you have an app store there, you have a lot of developers who do apps for an iPhone. Or Android world, it's a different thing. What happens there, it's not just these two stakeholders, but there are many, there is some platform provided by Apple in iOS thing that you have the operating system, you have some upper layer on that, you have some development tools that usually that kind of provider provides the tools to make that as easy as possible to for the external stakeholders to create apps for that. And it's benefit for all. If you have this kind of big player, it's benefit for the all to support this kind of ecosystem. So I have an example of that. Or the similar, you have the Microsoft world. It's been a long time on computers. Or software development tools, Eclipse. Do you use Eclipse in the programming courses here? Yes? Okay. Okay, I think it's open source tool maintained by Eclipse Foundation. But You have a number of different tools built on that, commercial tools also, and so on, based on the platform. But let's take an example. So, just okay. I just made up this example. It's not real. It could be possibly. I'm not an expert in this technology or business models there, but you could have something like this. And you, the point, here are a couple of main points in this slide. To give an example of a software ecosystem and to show that you can have different kind of development models, which we discussed about, around the same project or product. Better here. So let's take the right side. If we have a smart TV, we may have something like this there from technological point of view. There may be some Linux distro as a platform for that. That's open source community that's responsible for creating that platform. Then the TV has own operating system. They usually call it as operating system. At least it's on top of that Linux platform. It's something they make themselves on top of the Linux. It's not part of the television, but usually, as I said in the previous slide, they usually, if they are big players, they want to get a lot of developers in the field. They usually, like, I would guess that the big TV producers, I checked at least one, they provide development tools for app developers for different platforms. In one TV producer, I found they had tools for Mac platform or whatever for developers on different platforms. And so that's, they want to get as many developers as they can. Then on top of all, in the television, you have finally a set of applications. Some of the applications are made by the television manufacturer, their R&D, their in-house team, which is in the center, in the left side. The in-house team does something, possibly operating system, there is a team responsible for that. Then some team is responsible for those developer tools for app development, then they do some applications possibly themselves, like, you need some set of applications in TV. And then you have third-party applications also, like Netflix, whatever you have in your TV nowadays. On the left side, how the development might go, the in-house team may do the upper layers here, or possibly you have several teams in this size of a company. And then, of course, they might participate also further development of that Linux platform. But in some kind of cases, it may happen that it's more convenient, more kind of, it's easier, it makes more sense for the logic and resources of the company to use outsourcing for that. They see that they need some new features for the Linux platform. They could add that as an operating system level technically, but sometimes it makes more sense to add it in the platform, participate actively the open source community. It's benefit of the TV manufacturer that the open source community does well. It's their goal to support the open source community at this point. And sometimes what they do, they use some outsourcing vendor, which is expert of Linux development, and outsource some tasks there. And please develop these new features to the platform, to the Linux distro we are using for this, and provide it for open source packages. And The TV company pays for that, for outsourcing company. Okay. Then we have these third party app developers like Netflix, I said, or similar applications you have in every TV. So it's benefit of both bodies that the whole ecosystem does good. It, so that's why the TV company wants to provide good development tools. Sometimes even if you have big player like Netflix and you have a big TV company, they might even help in developing tools for developers like themselves. Okay, it can get mixed. Of course, you have customers there. You can use customers for different reasons, like we discussed about crowd. Okay, I have crowd there separately. You can, for example, you use crowd for testing resources in different ways. Okay, you get the point. There are mixed relationships, different parties, and it's in this kind of ecosystem, it's benefit for all if the whole ecosystem does good. It's not competition. They are aiming for the same goal as a team, to say, how to say it. And the second point was that you can mix different development models in this, in the same picture. You have their open source part, you use outsourcing, you have in-house teams, you may use crowd for something, and you have to find out what makes sense for which purposes in the whole picture. Okay, I think I'm not going to stay here so that we go to the practical side. Pekka just told us about the future and a couple of slides here, please. But I'm going to skip them. Okay, my keywords when I did some Google research, what are the hot topics at the moment? Here, let's get. So, you can see pretty much the same keywords like Pekka just said here in the couple of slides, like the key factors here in this slide: speed, data, ecosystems. So we are getting faster and faster, as Pekka explained, in the field. IoT is a big thing again. Okay, blockchain is one of the keywords that you can see everywhere. I don't know. That's, for me, that's still a question if we're going to get there or not. If it's going to be in the mainstream, in the factory or not. But okay, let's forget about the future for now. Okay, just to revise briefly what we have discussed in this course. I shared that in 6 points. First, we had a couple of introductory lectures. Then we had a couple of lectures of general issues in systems development. We discussed about processes. We discussed about software quality. Then we had 3 lectures of agile development, and then you have first 3 articles in your course readings about agile also. Then DevOps, continuous development, we didn't discuss much in the lectures. In Tony's first lecture, video lecture from last year, you have very brief introduction to that, and then you have a couple of articles in the course readings. So DevOps or continuous development as part of that. Then we had we had a video lecture of modeling some basic concepts on that, and after that we had Juha-Pekka Tolvanen to give a visiting lecture of domain-specific modeling, specifically as a systems development approach. And then we discussed a bit more about that again, and I tried to generalize that phenomenon in terms of reuse and automation. And finally, we discussed something about global systems development to when we scale this to outsourcing. And then we discussed a bit of crowdsourcing related to that part also. So, yeah. Yeah. Different terms. In my lectures we didn't go throughout definitions. Check the video lecture about that. That's my so it goes through different definitions a bit. Okay, offshoring usually means different from home country.
Yeah, exactly.
But the actual use of the word. Often when you read about offshoring, that doesn't mean mean Estonia from Finland. It means something like India or China. But basically, if you try to find some definition, the definition I know at least, it says it's outside of own country. But sometimes these terms are mixed. It's not so fixed, the actual use of this. In different companies, if you take some rather big Finnish company and see their definitions, often they see something like Estonia, Baltic countries, even Poland, which either is in Europe, it's near shore in these terms, and offshore is on another continent or at least far away. So. Okay, this is very quickly what we have discussed during the whole course. And here is my kind of summary of all I'm not going to summarize all of it, but some main points, what I hope you have learned during the course. Okay, I hope you have at least a bit better understanding of systems development generally, of all you understand what kind of different functions are included, what kind of different practices we have in this field. What is the overall picture that, like I said earlier in some lectures, that you understand that it's much more to handle this whole systems development and all the practices and business, it's much more than just gathering some requirements, program and test, and then deliver the software. There is much more. And one of the main points, okay, we didn't go through so much different technological environments in this course, but I hope you understand this, that systems development is more heterogeneous than ever. We have a lot of different kind of software systems. We have them everywhere. They are different environments for different purposes. And then that's why we have different kind of approaches in the field. You don't have one tool that fits for all. I don't know if you never have had such, but especially for today, it's more heterogeneous the field than ever. You need to understand the full picture, basic characteristics. And in this point, that's really the core thing that Pekka discussed about alpha, whatever it was, alpha kernel ideas, that you have to understand deeply the basics of the business, and then you can adapt to any new kind of thinking, new kind of development, fancy ideas that come to the market. So I hope you can understand at some level the different approaches we have discussed during the course. We didn't go to the many details. The most details we had with agile development, because I expected that you have some background of basics with agile, and with a clue about different perspectives, more specific perspectives on agile. But basically, I hope you can say some basic things on different approaches. If you take some of the topics of the course, you can see the general benefits out of it. What are the costs? What are the challenges? That are the main questions. Okay. Basically, I would guess most of my potential questions for the exams are related to the keywords here. Benefits, costs, challenges. My tip one for the exam. So that's what we have discussed. That's the level we have had in our discussion in this course. So that next point in the middle, that was in the course description as a learning goal. It's good. That was some kind of an aim. I don't know how far we got there in this course, but that's the main goal, that in the end you could assess different methods in the field and understand how they are applicable in different contexts. So to understand this, in this whole heterogeneous field, understand how different the contexts are, and then how different the methods are, and try to understand what kind of methods, because this needs understanding the why questions. Some superficial understanding is not enough for this. So that's why we don't get very deep with this in this course, I suppose. But I think you get at least something. So I hope in the at least the level is what is said in the next point. So let's imagine a situation that you work in a company and someone wants to sell a new method, fancy method, which is the current trend of this year or the next, that you understand the basics and you are able to at least ask the right questions. Think about, so wait a minute, we do work as we do nowadays. If we take in this kind of new method, what is it about? You understand what are the right questions you have to ask. How does this affect our organization, our current working practices, how the project management, how the current roles in the organization? Wait a minute, what does this cost? At least remember, new approach is always an investment. Usually you don't get any fast benefit economically, no matter what's new you want to apply in your organization. This is at least what I hope. You try to see the similarities. No matter what the method is, there are different functions and the basic things in a software organization, and you must ask, how does this new affect our project management, quality assurance, what kind of management, coordination, control mechanisms we need, and so on. Okay, finally, for this course, the reason why we haven't taken a look at the most hot topics in the field, possibly. We have had some, but not many and not very deeply, because the basis for the course has been research. And so we have taken a look at the approaches which has been already established and has been a while in the field, so that we have enough material, research-based material on them. And so I hope you learn something about that also. We have a set of scientific articles there. I hope you get some of this. I don't know how far we get there during the one course. You do that same thing in the other courses also. But finally, your biggest challenge with this is your master's thesis, which you're going to do for graduation. I hope this helps a bit. You learn to understand research, what kind of research is, how it communicates in this specific field, if we think about this course. And when you do your final assignment for the course report or die, I was asking you to think about these learning goals or whatever I've discussed around this slide. So how do you think you manage with this? So write something about that. Okay, finally in the end, some practical things. To revise this, I changed the deadline a couple of days because for me it's basically the same if I get the reports on Friday or on Sunday. I start reading on next Monday after that. Okay, submissions, please. Some of you, very few luckily, have missed this several times for one. Despite of all the instructions, please, in one PDF file. It's not a big issue, but it's annoying to open Word documents. Late. Okay, again, if you submit late, I'm not completely against that, but that means higher evaluation requirements. You don't have to ask for permission for being a couple of days late. But my strict rule is that you submit your course report before you participate in the exam. And the exams, again, here. The first one is next week, and then a couple of more. And the last one you can have also in Helsinki. Okay, any questions at this point? The practical issues? You know what to do to pass the course? Yeah. Yeah. About the, well, I'm not asking what is in a specific paper. Okay, I'm not sure if that's too much promised. For example, okay, one paper is, for example, an agile is agile in regulated environment. Okay, that could be one example. That's specific. That depends on the topic in the course, because in agile we get deeper in the thinking than with any other topic in the course. The questions may be more specific. So and on that paper on agile I could ask about specific characteristics or challenges of agile development in regulated environment. So you will need to understand some specific issues on paper, but I think you can understand the question that it's related to that. We didn't talk, okay, I referred to that kind of thinking a couple of times in the lectures, but I didn't have throughout discussion on that. It's in the paper in that case. So, or, for example, another example, I can come with quickly, we didn't discuss actually basically at all in the lectures for different reasons for crowdsourcing, which we discussed last time briefly, but in one of the, I had one slide here, but I didn't speak it in the lecture. But in your case study on crowdsourcing, in the beginning of paper, you have a pretty good summary of different reasons. But that could be one example, okay? Reasons for crowdsourcing. And that's a good example. I can give you a bit more detail, detail of that. I expect some level of explanation. Please demonstrate that you have understood the points instead of listing them, because it's rather short list in that paper. And based on that part of that paper only, you get this size of list. Few different points, but that doesn't show that you have understand what's background in the of the points there. Because in terms of crowdsourcing, for example, those reasons of or expected benefits of crowdsourcing, however you put it, they depend on the model. You can't take, okay, it's hard to define the whole crowdsourcing. So it depends what you mean by crowdsourcing, what's your crowdsourcing model. That's related to the expected benefits. You have to show that you have understand that and explain that, okay, this given reason for crowdsourcing one, that reason one fits to this kind of crowdsourcing model, and the benefit out of it comes for these reasons. You have to be able to explain that. Don't just put lists, but give explanation. Okay, I had it here. So, overall for the exam, some potential questions are from the lectures, some from the articles. They are essays. I don't ask for simple definitions or anything like that. So, essays, typical questions, like I said, are something like challenges with applying method X somewhere, or general benefits of this kind of approach, or essays. If you are able to choose, would you prefer 2 or 3 questions in the exam? I haven't decided.
If we have to write 2, I would prefer to have 3 options.
Okay. But generally, I don't mind. It's 2 is less reading for me. But 3 is kind of better opportunity for you to kind of, if you worry about passing the exam, at least for those of you, if you get 3 questions to answer, you can hope for to be able to answer at some level at least 2 of them. Okay, you get the idea.
Can we have 3 options and then answer the 2 questions?
Okay. Okay, 2 is enough. Okay, all right. Okay, I'm with you. If that's your opinion. If you are as lazy writers as I'm with reading, so So that's bitter for both. Yeah. Okay, let's go with that kind of setting. What I expect in the essay. So please remember, demonstrate the understanding of the concept. So typically, explain the terms. If I ask something about agile development, don't write there the whole agile manifesto. So it's kind of too much. You can think yourself if it's even necessary to define the terms. It depends on the terms. Use common sense. But just a couple of sentences to explain that you have understood the terms in the question. So, but more important, speak about different viewpoints. If I ask about benefits of some approach in systems development, don't just write one viewpoint. You can, okay, I have seen, it's been several years ago, but I have read a lot of exams and that's typical phenomenon in someone has a long working history but haven't read the full course material. They may have deep understanding of one of the viewpoints asked in the question, and they may write 4 pages around that one single viewpoint, and they understand that way better than I ever do. But what I'm asking is just a fine level of understanding of several different viewpoints. And as I said, don't just list them, explain. Just one model to make it very simple. If I have this kind of question, yes? Okay, let's see. It depends. There may be different variation of questions in the sense of that. It's if you see some kind of challenges or benefits there, it's plural already in the question. So you are supposed to have many means. Absolutely more than two. So, but I don't know if this fits for all, but just one example, if I have this kind of question about benefits or challenges of method, something in systems development, so give some definition so that I see that you understand what you speak about. Some definition for the most important keywords, if that's necessary for that specific question. Think about that. Then, if I brought an answer for this, I would first list my points. If I have four points in my, like in this example, how many points? I have 6 points in this example. Okay, I would list those 6 points and briefly, and then I would write simply one paragraph of each point to explain that I have understood. So that paragraph explains the why question. So what is the benefit? It's the main question for this. If I list 6 potential benefits, then in each paragraph I explain, and this is a benefit because these reasons, and then in the end you may have some explanation that actually this was a simplified thing, that you show that actually you understand that it depends on different restrictions and conditions in the case, so because one tool doesn't fit for all, you demonstrate this understanding of this. So generally speaking, we can see these kind of benefits for this specific method, but then in the end you can say that actually it depends on this kind of situations and conditions in the environment. Okay, you get the point. I wanted to go this proof. You are supposed to know this already at this point of this is your fourth or fifth or I don't know how many year for some of you, but you have studied a while already. You should know this, but I want to be clear to help you a bit for the exam. Okay, any other questions? Okay. Then it's the end of the lectures for this course. I wait for your course reports and hopefully see many of you in the exam next week already. Okay.